G'day everybody. How you going? I'm just trying to mount this camera because it's the. I just want to see if I can tilt the screen. No. Sorry about this. I'm just setting up the camera. It's a bit. I'm in a funny place here at the moment. Just bear with me. I'm making a little camera holder. Excellent. Whoop, it all fell down. Hang on. Just hold on. Okay, my iPad's not rotating at the moment, so I have to balance it very carefully. So, hello everybody. I hope you can see me okay. And is the screen for you guys in the right? Is it facing upright? I'm not upside down or sideways. Okay. So thanks for coming on. There's a few people coming online tonight. So yeah, we just got our live talk, and I've got a few good questions come through online. I'm just down at Black Hill Equestrian Centre at the moment, and I've just completed a two-day clinic down here, and actually it's a really, really good clinic. Some really nice things happened over the clinic. I had a sort of mix of horses, and we had a couple of hot ones and a couple of sort of ones that were really. Difficult to sort of try and sort of reconnect with people again. But it was a good, good clinic. And I'm off tomorrow to head up to Glen Innes to see, and then on my way through Glen Innes, I've got to go to Stanthorpe for lessons, and up to Brisbane and Gatton for a clinic, and then Brisbane and back home. So yeah, I'm on the road at the moment. So anyway, I've got a couple of questions here. The first question from, I can see you're already on, Bernadette. I think I saw your name come up there. And this is a really good question. It's something that I come across a lot. And this is the answer to this that I'll sort of give you is only my version, I guess. I've heard the term myself over the years. And, it's only my version of what I think bridal lame is. But Bernadette's question is, could you please explain the term bridle lame as you see it, and then how it can be overcome? I know you said it at how long. Can it be fixed? Okay, so bridle lame is something you come across quite a bit. Now, to me, a bridle lame horse, say for instance, I can give you some examples of horses, like a horse that you get like the braces and fights and gets on the bit and just doesn't do anything or doesn't understand, I wouldn't call that bridle lame. So you get like, say, I'll give you an example, an ex-race horse. It grabs onto the bit and it holds it and is stiff and braced and doesn't, really like the bit, and it fights it, and that's not bridle lame. I wouldn't class that as bridle lame in my, as I see it. As in, the question was, as I see it, that's how I see it. So all those horses that fight the bit and shake their head and all those things, yes, they've had damage from the bit, and yes, they're frightened of the bit, yes, they don't understand the bit, yes, all those things could technically, call them bridle lame, because they're they've got all these problems with the bit, you could call it a lameness, because, but bridle lame to me is when horses, they kind of they're like, they've got this an obedience to the bit. They're frightened. They're firstly frightened of the bit. They don't like it, but they're kind of obedient to it. So what they do is, you know, their eyes go dull and they shut down to it. And they don't really react to it. So they do react to it, but they don't react to it by fighting it. They react to it by hiding from it. And in their hiding from the bit, what happens is they don't think about their whole body. They don't think about a task. They just go into this place. It's almost like they're shut down from the bit. They sort of so they'll bend and they'll give, but their thoughts won't go into the task. They won't put any energy or effort into it. They're not interested in a task. They just sort of do what they can to get away from the pressure and just do the end. And you just see a dullness and a sadness in their eye. I guess that's what I see as bridal amble. They overbend and hide, but they bend around, but it doesn't get to their feet. It doesn't get to their thoughts. They're just trying to get away from the pressure, you know. So either they don't get hurt by the bit or something like that. So, because I find like when with bridal lameness, it's harder to fix. Jenny, I've just saw you come up, and I might use your horse as an example because it's probably a good question for your horse. Because Jenny, that's just come up online there. Her horse I call Bridle Lame. Now, and I'll use her horse because I'm probably better with examples of horses than you know, to tell a story about a horse that I've come across, because it might give you a clearer picture of bridle lameness. Because I don't want to sort of spend a lot of time confusing you guys and just going up a garden path about, you know, with my thoughts. So so Jenny's horse came to a clinic, and he would bend, he would give, he would do all these things, but he wouldn't think. He'd just give and hide from the bit, regardless if he was stuck, like, at the yards with his mates, or he didn't want to go out to do anything, so he'd just get stuck, so he'd push out through the shoulders and push you into a fence, or just stop, or just, and nothing tended to work, and when you sort of bent him or did anything or tried to steer him, you just bent him all the way around and nothing happened, and there was no desire in the reins, it didn't get to his thoughts and it didn't get through his body to his feet. So he was quite bridle lame, and so we did a bit of an experiment, because like what I do is, everything I do is kind of an experiment. So I go, well, This is not working, that's not working, and all these other things aren't working. So how are we going to try and help this horse understand just how to follow the feel of a rein? So we went back to just riding him in I can't remember, it was a halter. Jenny rides him now in a side pull, but we went to a halter. Now, the reason we went to a halter is because what made him bridle lame was being bumped and bent and 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 bumped and bent, and I can keep repeating that. And when I get to about 500,000 times or more, that's how many times he'd been bumped and bent in his past life, possibly before Jenny. So after all that bumping and bending without changing his thoughts or creating desire through the reins, he just hid from the reins. And his thoughts would stay with the horses in the yards. His thoughts wouldn't engage in anything. He just shut down in the feet, or he just walked to where he wanted to go, regardless of where the reins and his head was, because he was hiding. He's completely lame in the mouth. And so what I did is, by putting the halter on, I went through a different path to his brain. And because he hadn't been bumped and bent and bumped and bent and bumped and bent and bumped and bent 55,000,000 times with a Holter, it was a little bit different. So I had a pathway to his brain through the feel on his nose. And that pathway gave us a little bit more opportunity to teach him to sort of steer, and it did. And so what happened was we sort of went down that pathway of riding him in the Holter to get him to sort of learn how to cast his thoughts with his, you know, with the bend and follow his thoughts with his feet and start to get a little bit of desire in the reins. Yeah, I guess the other thing in bridle lameness, it's a horse that has no desire in the reins. It has no life in the reins. It just hides from the reins, and it kind of shuts down to the reins. So with Toby, we just sort of kept working on that, and now, you know, there's still times that he bends around and gets a little bit leaky in the shoulders and gets a little bit lost, but he's made a massive improvement. And what we did to fix some of that bridle lameness was, you know, turn means go in a new direction and float out. And when he had a thought in a new direction that was good, we sort of went along with it. You know, whether we had to turn him to his magnet and let him go towards it and say, oh, your turning's a good thing. This is good to follow your head, you know, that's, and fix it like that. Now, it's a funny thing, bridle lameness, because it tends to be the more obedient, shut-down horses that tend to suffer. Well, this is my version. Some of you guys might come on and say, well, I've got a version of bridle lameness, and it's just my interpretation of it and my version of bridle lameness. But yeah, there's horses that, you know, as I said, there's horses that, you know, they nearly rear over backwards when you touch the reins. Those horses are searching. That's, I guess, the difference. They might be crazy and they might be dangerous, but they're actually, there's a desire in them to seek refuge either from the pressure of the bit or the fear of the bit, but they're actually trying to find an answer in it, and they're trying to get away from it or trying to do something, but they're doing it by reacting. And whereas the ones that are properly bridle lame, they just hide and they go into this place where they just stop thinking and searching, because they stopped searching, you know, years ago. They just started to sort of try to get away from the pressure, so they just go to, you know, maybe a few different answers that they think's right, and they just stay on those answers. They don't find any other answers. They're not trying to get away from it. They're getting away from it, but they're getting away from it by just hiding from it, and they only go to the things that they think are right, which is just bending. I hope I'm not getting you guys too confused on this. I don't see the crazy braced horses as bridle lame. I just see them as uneducated, and they don't understand. Yeah, so Jenny says he still has strong thoughts. So the thing with it is with Toby, he's always, because he didn't like work and he didn't like people, he sometimes it's very hard to find that desire in him to sort of go, hey, I'd like to do things together. So we, you know, you have to be very creative to get him to want to do that. But yeah, so there's a lot of horses I get at clinics that are on the way to bridle lameness, and the one thing I notice that causes bridle lameness is when people trying to make their horses too obedient in the reins. They want this soft feel in the reins, and they want their horse bendy and soft, and they want to just feel like there's, you know, not much in their hands, and they're worried more about the horse giving in its head, and they micromanage every single little thought. So every time the horse, you know, bends a little bit in the wrong direction, they sort of get a bump in the mouth, and they sort of go, oh, crikey, I better not do that again. But so many bends and bumps and things that don't mean anything to the horse, meaning, like, you don't take up a rein for nothing. Like, and too often I see either people taking a rein because it's a habit, because when they ride and they go left, they hold a rein out to the left, and they just, that's what they do. But they're holding a rein without asking a question, and they're not asking a question that has a clear answer. because they don't have the answer in their mind. The horse doesn't have the answer, so because they're just holding the rein because it's a habit. And horses aren't iPhones, they just don't operate because we slide the screen across and press a button and that's the way it goes. So when we take a rein, we have to really take it up and have a clear intention with that rein, and then that horse has to answer that intention, and then we reward that. But when you teach a horse to sort of like following the reins have got to be a pathway to a better place, not just a shape. If you just think you're creating a shape in a horse, then you're just riding an iPhone. You're just riding something that you think you can control just by the push of a button. So we're not creating a shape. We're creating a desire in our horses. And you know, like this clinic that I just did, you know, the taking up a rein is the pathway to something different. And when the horse understands that, and that pathway is something that is good, as in, you know, like the horses that don't connect with their owners and stuff like that, when we take a rein, we're only steering them, one, to distract them from the thing that made them worried. But the distraction is the pathway back to a connection with something that makes them feel better, whether that might be standing with you know, in a place where they can relax, whether that be... you know, going down the paddock and looking at some new things, whether it be, you know, so in a lot of horses, if you create a little bit of desire and interest in the reins, the horses, you know, they start to think the reins are a good idea opposed to just a submissive tool. And horses that are, you know, so the people who sort of have been getting a stronger obedience out of the reins and a real you know, I'm going to make you obedient with the reins, I'm going to make you bend, I'm going to put you in any shape, and I can shape you as much as I like, regardless of how you feel about it, or regardless of changing your thoughts, or anything like that, then those horses tend to be the bridle lane ones, or my version of bridle lane. And you can't start to see it in their eyes, they know the bit's coming before it comes, and they sort of hide, and they sort of cringe a little bit, and they've just lost interest in their task before so the reins. So I hope that helps you burn on that one, because it's an interesting subject and you see it a lot. And it's sad to see, because the horses look sad in themselves. So it's much easier to remouth a braced crazy horse that's rearing over backwards than sometimes one that's been overbroken in the bridle. You know, I like my horses real broken. I'll break their head till they got no, you know, no search in them. So Louise. Right, Louise. Good question. How to keep your horse balanced and centered position when riding circles at walk and trot. How to keep your horse's barreled center over his feet. Okay. Now, how to keep your horse's barrel centered over his feet. Don't feed him too much, because the wider he gets, the wider the barrel gets. Does that help? No, just joking. Now, asking that, the first question was in the videos. I'm pretty sure, just at the last clinic, we took some video footage of a little bit more centering with the reins, as in getting a horse to sort of center up and center underneath us. In my head right at the moment, there's probably snippets here and there through the video footage of bits and pieces of that, but there's not one particular lesson that I've done that talks about getting a horse to center up underneath us. You know, like getting him to really follow and be right underneath us in the middle. So I'm going to talk about it a little bit so we can sort of answer the question while I'm here. And it's just another one of those videos that's going to come online. As you know, I think our subscription's still in its infancy. And you know, we're slowly putting more videos as we get good footage that can sort of make sense to people. So it is something that's there and on the cards and going to come on there. So, and I'd like to do more of it because it's something that I think people need to know, because when they start to get working their horses and, you know, getting that horse underneath is going to be really good. But while it's, I've just finished the clinic today, and we did a fair bit of that at the clinic here today, you know, getting horses to sort of find the middle. And we had some really nice results with some horses, you know, particularly at this clinic today, that because there was a few things where we had to get horses to sort of want to centre up underneath us and, you know, come around their corners nice and just generally stay centred underneath us. So I talk about centering a lot at clinics, you know. Now, the centre is kind of like the sweet spot, right? So the sweet spot is underneath us. It's that spot that where the horse goes, I'm here, am I? Now, you got to kind of make the sweet spot something that the horse likes, or centre to something that the horse has got to know that was good to be there and I'd like to stay there. Not by making it overly hard elsewhere, but the way I ride, I imagine just a pathway with little river banks and stuff like that, and the water, the horse is the water that's flowing, and somewhere in the middle there's the current, like, which is that bit where the horse finds the middle and it just floats along underneath us. Now, to get a horse to find centre, you got to firstly get it to switch on to the left rein and the right rein. So I don't put a horse's barrel underneath me as such. I just put their mind underneath me. When their mind's underneath me, their barrel's underneath me. So I don't, you know, put a leg here and a leg there and squeeze that and squeeze that to push them underneath me. I don't force them underneath me. I don't try and say, you know, keep in this line. So if I ride out on a horse, I don't, like, something I'm talking about more, because, you know, all I'm ever, you know, my evolution of training is, how can I, you know, I'm always constantly learning, but one thing I'm sort of trying to do is, how can I get my message across to make it clear so people can learn? So my teaching evolves as in, oh, that's a better way to explain something, and that's a better way, and people start to cotton on, and horses are cottoning on to things. So what I talk about a lot at clinics is when we're riding out with our horses, we donate a certain amount of that time to our horse. How much we donate is depending on the horse and depending on how that lesson went. So we donate a part of the ride to our horse. I know the question was how to get a horse to come underneath us on a turn or something like that, but this is sort of, I guess, the pathway to it. So, and someone questioned it today and said, what do you mean by that? And I had to think about it. I'm like, well, what do I mean by it? What do I mean by it? Well, what do I mean by it? Donating a certain amount of time to your horse is, when you ride out, you don't ride a line, you don't ride an S, you don't ride to the letters, you don't focus there and your horse will suddenly follow your focus, and you don't ride straight lines, and you don't ride circles, and you don't ride figure of eights, and you don't own your direction. So what I mean is, when I ride out, I don't own my direction. Oh, the video dropped out. Is everyone still seeing me? I'm on a personal hotspot. I got my telephone on personal hotspot, so I'm hoping. Now, I may have to plug my phone in because I'm a bit of a distance from the charger, but I got the questions on the phone, and good old tech guru I am. Anyway, we donate a certain amount. Oh, good, people can see me still. Awesome. So what I mean by that is, I don't ride out and say, you're going on my road, my line, let's go. I just go out and I sit on the horse and it leaves. And, if the horse is going up a dead end, I might just reset it and go in a new direction. If it sort of emotionally leaves me too much, I might just take a rein and turn it in a new direction. And every time I turn the horse, I deliberately recenter. Now, I came up with a new way of explaining something today, because as I just said, I'm always trying to teach in a way that makes people understand. And when I see my words aren't computing with the rider, I quickly think of another picture that helps that rider understand what I mean. So something I come up with today as I was riding, when I was talking about recenter, was because I didn't think the person was recentering as I'd like them to recenter. As in, I still think they were hanging a rein out and stuff like that. As I said, imagine that you're riding along and each rein, where the reins are, is a gun holster. And you pull that gun out and you shoot it, and then you're not allowed to use this gun over here until you've reholstered that one. Now, you've got to have both guns holstered like that before you pull one out. Holster, pull the other one out. Holster the gun, put the other one out. And imagine those reins of holsters just in front of, sitting up there, just in front where you hold your reins. You've got two holstered holsters tied to your horse. So I'd reholster, pull out, turn, reholster. Pull out, turn, reholster the gun. Now, so when we ride, quite oftenly, our horses won't centre because we tap them on the shoulder and then we keep our hand on the shoulder and they just lose interest. Now, the beauty about rein, like the best thing you can sort of, like, the thing that makes a rein work, I think, on a horse is there's a certain element of surprise, okay? Now, the element of surprise, to me, gets the horse to go, what was that? Okay. Now, most people, because they ride mechanically, as in they're just riding here, riding there, riding here, they get so good at riding that they forget about what they're doing. And they just think, you know, pulling a left rein means left, pulling a right rein means right. But because their hand's moving all the time without thinking, and they're turning here and they're turning there, they lose that element of surprise. So if I walked up behind you and sort of tapped you on the shoulder, you'd go that way or you'd go that way, depending on what side I tapped you. So if I tap you on the shoulder, you're going to turn. And if I took my hand away and tapped you again, you'd turn. But if I just tapped you on the shoulder and just kept my hand there and didn't worry about it, then when I went to get your interest again, I'm going to have to go, I have to nearly squeeze your shoulder and say, hey, because I kept my hand there. So when you're riding your horse, you have to deliberately offer centre and you have to deliberately take a turn. And then you have to deliberately offer centre, because if you don't deliberately offer centre, maybe the horse doesn't know you offered centre. And quite often we think we just loosen up on the rein and the horse goes, oh look, pressure release, yeah, I've understood it. But I've realised that actually a lot of people lighten up on the rein, but they're just sort of hanging out there still. And it doesn't really matter. So by recentering and then picking up the rein, the horse goes, oh, what was that? And they think to that side and they go, oh. And use that element of surprise to interrupt their thought and get them to sort of maybe think to the left or to the right before you turn. So where am I going with this? Okay. So when you go back to riding, don't ever do a circle until your horse can turn and centre. Okay, so you might ride along going turn, increment, centre. Turn, increment, centre. Turn, increment the other way, centre. Deliberately take the rein, deliberately get the turn, deliberately reholster the reins. Deliberately turn, deliberately reholster the guns, yeah? So what happens when you're riding the straight line? The horse has this quiet place that's all very centred. You're not riding them on a straight line, okay? You're allowing them to find centre. Okay, if they don't find centre and they wobble out over there, you can just reholster, take a rein out, turn them, reholster the guns. When they've found a new line, offer centre again. You make centre an offering and you deliberately offer it. You take a turn, you deliberately offer centre. Okay. Now, that makes you ask a deliberate question when you take the rein, and when the horse turns a bit, or turns as much as you've taken that rein, you say, centre, thank you, deliberately. Because if you don't deliberately do that, you won't. You may think you are. Some people do it, but a lot of people I notice just ride, riding a right turn, riding a left turn, riding a right turn, riding a left. No one deliberately goes there, 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 okay? So the horse ends up going outside the circle because they want to be with their mates. It ducks through the turn because it's hunting the turn, but it doesn't, it's hunting, it's not hunting, it's sort of ducking into the turn because it's hunting across the turn to just turn. But if it was hunting centre, it'd only go as far as it needs to find centre. So it would only go an increment, if you only asked an increment. So before you even think about riding a circle, sorry, my, can I, sorry, Jenny sent a message. People can still see me, can't they? Because my hotspot's on, and it seems to be working, it seems to be on the computer, and I'm still live. Can someone send another? No, people are still coming up, I'm still working. Okay, so, oh, thanks, Tracy. Cool. Still working, awesome. I just had a message, maybe it was an old message. So, when we're riding out, don't do circles or anything like that for a while. Never do a circle until your horse is steering and centering, steering and centering, steering and centering, steering and centering. So, and the other thing is, if you can't ride a straight line on your horse, so when you ride a straight line, you should just sit centre. We shouldn't have to hold our horses on a straight line, okay? If we hold our horses on a straight line, they're not going to circle because they're leaking on a straight line. Now, what a lot of times we do is when we ride a straight line, we ride crooked. So, going back to that, you know, some people will say you've got to ride with focus. So, if you look at S, ride to S, ride to S. So, a person looks at S, points a horse to S, and rides to S. Now, that's not donating that first part of the ride to yourself, to your horse. It's donating it to yourself. I ride to S, and you're just going to follow. And a lot of times, you know, people say if you ride with a strong focus, the horse will pick it up and it'll start to follow you. But what if it doesn't? You'll ride to S regardless if your horse wanted to ride to across the arena to his mates. So you'll ride to S. Sorry, my voice is a bit croak. I've been talking all day at a clinic. So you'll be riding to S and the horse will be drifting to his mates. So to keep him riding to S, you'll keep him riding to S. So you'll actually ride him crooked. Now, what I mean by crooked is you'll actually sort of put enough crookedness on your horse that potentially, if he was centered, that'd be enough crookedness to turn him. So you're riding a turn to get your horse to do a straight line. Okay, so you're riding, holding your horse to ride to S. So you're kind of riding crooked over here to keep him going to S. So you're teaching him that when you turn or put leg on or whatever you're using to get that horse to stay straight, that's enough potentially to make that horse turn. But you're using that to make him ride straight. So you're riding a straight line crooked. So if you've got to ride a straight line crooked, don't even go near a circle. So what I say is don't ride a straight line crooked. Allow your horse to leave the straight line, create a new direction with a turn, and then centre up and say, find centre. And when your horse just finds centre, turns, finds centre, turns, finds centre, turns, finds centre, then when you go out on a circle, you just go, I'm not doing a circle, I'm doing a turn, centre, turn, centre, turn, centre, turn, centre, turn, centre. And however close and however big you make those, or however tight you make those turns and however close you make those centres depends on the direction that you're going. So turning and centering just keeps your horse underneath you. So your horse always hunts center. So it's hunting you. It's hunting that sweet spot, because if you offer it, the horse goes, there it is, there it is, there it is. So it's not trying to cut the corner. It's not trying to bulge out. It's only ever trying to find that little spot where you go, center, 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 and it just floats. So it becomes little friction riverbanks that just get that horse to find. So that's how I sort of try and get horses to balance underneath me in the reins and think the turns. So what happens also is like sometimes a horse that really cuts one side, cuts in, cuts in, cuts in, and you just come around because there's a bit of desire over there, too much desire, and it wants to cut across to get to its whatever's created that desire. Okay, so those horses I might go out a bit, in a bit, out a bit, in a bit, out a bit, in a bit, and then they just go out a bit, in a bit, out a bit, in a bit, out a bit, out a bit, in a bit, and then they go, I'll just go as much as you asked. Okay, so sometimes if you go left, center, right, center, left, center, right, center, when you're riding, they'll start to hunt that center, and if they get a little bit wobbly or get too much desire to leak out from underneath you, you just might go left, center, right, center, left, center, right, center, and they'll get a little bit, oh, crikey, where am I going? And they'll start to try and hunt a little bit to where you want them to go, and when you feel them start to distract them from that desire that they had that made them want to leave, and they're going, where do you want me to go? And then when you feel them going, where do you want me to, then you go, you take that rein and you'll feel them want to hook onto it. And then when they hook onto it, you go, center. And then they'll come out and go, there it is. And you'll feel them, they'll go, there it is, I just found it. I just found center. I hope that makes sense. When you're watching a horse and you're watching me teach someone do it, you can kind of understand it. But I hope that sort of helps. But yeah, don't do, you know, inside leg, outside rein, all that stuff. Just get them to follow the feel and stay underneath you, okay? If this keeps freezing and I don't have a good internet connection, you may have to re-watch it, because it's just a bit of poor service here. I got 4G, but maybe not quite enough. Unlearn circles, that's it. Don't do a circle for a while. You don't need to do circles. What you need to do is learn how to turn and do a straight line. Circles are patterns, figure eights are patterns, and it's lovely to ride a nice circle, but you can't ride a nice circle without steering, so you've got to learn to teach a horse to turn before it does a circle. Very important. Why not inside leg to outside rein? Very good question. Why not inside leg to outside rein? Lot of aids just to keep a horse on a basic turn. It's an inside rein and out, you know, you got an inside rein on, you got an outside rein on, you got an inside leg on, and you're trying to shape your horse around your leg and things like that, and a horse that's thinking on a circle, all you have to do is put the horse's thoughts on a circle and it's in balance. So the head, the shoulders, the hind will all follow in balance. The only time a horse gets out of balance on that circle is when it doesn't want to be on the circle or the turn or anything like that. So to me, inside leg to outside rein is a way of sort of holding the horse on a circle, holding band-aids on to keep it sort of going around on a circle, whereas you just want to be picking up a little inside rein and tilting your horse's thoughts onto the turn you want, and they just should follow it. If your horse hasn't got an understanding and obedience to the inside rein, then you're going to need other reins to sort of try and hold them together. But the whole idea is we don't hold them on the circle. We teach them to follow their thoughts with just a light inside rein, and they'll follow them. And then we can save our inside rein and our outside rein and our inside leg for more performance things later on, instead of just following a circle. I hope that makes sense. Because if a horse leaks out and things like that, then it's not following the inside rein correctly. So, now another question. I'm just going to quickly pop up and put my phone on charge. Now, Mary Malouf, I don't know if you're on here, Mary. There's a long question that you asked. I'd like to talk to you more about that to answer it clearly. I think it's a big question and it requires a little bit more of me personally either talking to you to figure out a best way to do an answer. So I might either, you know, somehow email it or something like that. You're struggling to get a relationship with your horse, and I'd like to talk to you about what you've done first and what you're doing before I just go off a little bit about it. And I will talk to you. I know I've spoke to you, but I'd just like to clarify a little bit more before I can answer your question. So, Cheryl, you've got a question about how to get your horse calm for a wormer. Okay, lovely stuff. One, get the companies to make tasty wormers, which is probably is not going to happen. Just hold on, everybody. I'm just going to duck in and put my phone on charge because it's supporting our talk at the moment. Apologise about that. So the reason I have to go back and put it on charge is because my charge cord broke and I had to quickly drive to a service station and buy a new one because it stopped charging. So yeah, with worming and bits and things like that, actually it was an interesting clinic today because we worked on some bidding up of horses. And sorry, I just missed a question there. It just disappeared on me. I don't know if you can bring the questions down. Oh, you can. Look at that. I've just learned something new. Oh, good. Good on you, Tony. That was good. You practiced a bit of centering. Great. It's a good thing. It's, you know, I will put some more videos about it so people can really sort of get the idea of it, but so with worming and stuff like that, so you've got to get your horse used to really being handled around the muzzle, you know, handled quite well around the muzzle. So now they're not going to like a wormer because some really hate the taste of it, but they've got to be comfortable with all the other things that don't have wormers. You know, that, you know, fingers and bits and things like that. So you've got to get a horse comfortable with pressure so you can always sort of put the horse in a nice, comfortable spot. So you can lower the head a bit, you can bend them in a bit, you can rub their muzzle, things like that. So if your horse fights that sort of pressure, can't lower its head, can't bend a little bit, can't soften, then what you're going to have to work on that. So, you know, And if you've got a real head shy horse or lip shy horse or something like that, even if you can sort of put a halter on and get it to lower a little bit and just know that you know, if it does put its head up, you can put it into a better place. So imagine that, you know, if you were talking about centering, if your sort of horse gets a bit of a fight, you pull the head down and then it comes into a place that it feels okay and you just let it relax there and it's a soft spot in there where there's no pressure on it. And then if it moves away from that spot, you can put a little bit of halter pressure on and it comes back down and comes into that spot. And then if it's a really lip nervous horse or, you know, one that fights when you stick your fingers in the mouth, something I sort of start with is touch and go. So I touch and go, touch and go. So instead of spending a lot of time until it fights and throws its head, and I just go in, I might just go, and just disappear. And I might go in again and go, and disappear. And the horse goes, nothing happened. And then after a while you go, and the horse will go, nothing happened. And then you'll go, and then the horse goes, that was all right. So it's like when you get on a young horse, you get on it and you get off it to show that horse that, don't worry, I'm not going to live here, I'm going to get off. If I put my hand on your muzzle, I'll take it off, see? And the horse goes, before the horse goes, I want to get away from that too much pressure, because sometimes the horses that are really tough, you try and hold on, and no matter if you try and say, I'm going to keep holding you until you soften, if you don't have enough tools on your horse, you could do that like desensitizing tie way, where you just keep the pressure on until they loosen up and then you take your hand off. problem is, if they're a pretty tough horse and they are really bothered by it, too much information, and you might sort of pick up a bit of a fight that you can't help them with, so they get worse with it. So in those ones, it's just touch and go, and you know, until they go, oh, you're going to leave that area, and then we're going to, you know, soften up and loosen up, and then you just go touch and go. And then when they get more comfortable, if they have a little fight, you can probably keep the pressure on, lower their head, and then when they loosen up to that fight, they just relax again, and they, here's a spot here, here's a relaxed spot here, okay? And then something what I do when I drench horses, I right up in here, I'll get my fingers so I can stick them right up the side of their teeth, don't put them in right up, and I go right up in there, and I can just hold them there like that, and my finger on their tongue, and just get them to hold their mouth open, and just, you know, do that, and I just get them, you know, and if they're a bit tough with it, as I say, when you're angry, and just go away, put your finger in, just go away, spend a bit of time doing that, and just get them so you can do more of that. And then when you get to that stage, something I do with the worming is I get them so comfortable I can just put my fingers up in there like that, and I'll have two fingers just up their side, and I'll just rub them over. And when they're open there, I have the drench just behind my fingers, so my fingers are up in the horse's mouth, and I come in behind because the mouth is open and it's ready. I've already got fingers and something already up in there. And then I come up in behind my fingers and I just go squirt and just leave them. And just let them have their drench. Once they're soft with those fingers and they're comfortable with it, that's the sort of way I tend to do it. The other way is you physically use the drench like your fingers and you do the same thing, okay? So I still would like to do it in a way where I've got my fingers in there first, so the drench just slides into an open mouth and you just gently put it straight up in there and job done. But if they're really frightened of the drench, you can start to sort of just have the drench with the cap on it and just go back to touch and go. Use the drench. Imagine the drench was a brush and you want to brush your horse's head with it. You just touch and go, touch and go, touch and go until the horse is so used to that drench all around its mouth and all that sort of thing that it's fine with it. And then coupled with that, what I was talking about, you can start to learn to drench, but you might just have to spend a bit more time. But that obedience in the holder and knowing how to give to pressure and relax to pressure and know that it's okay to be in here in a comfortable spot to drench and handle. And the horse might find a bit of friction when it puts its head out there, but when it comes back into a comfortable spot, there's a nice release in there and it feels a lot better. So anything particular, Rhonda? I think I'm seeing you. Oh, I was reading the wrong thing there, but anything particular, just, you know, we'll talk about that more. But I hope that helps with the drenching. There's one more question that I'll finish up with before I go. I've just got to go get it back off my phone while it's charging, so I'll just bring the phone over now that's had a bit of charge. So, okay, so this was a question that, and it sort of goes a little bit along the lines of bridle lameness, so I probably should have answered it with the bridle lame question, but it just was on in messages, so Andrea, it's with your quarter horse Pally who ducked behind the bridle at the Victorian clinic. Yes, I remember that horse. So I've been working with her at the clinic about sort of some new ideas, because not that your horse was completely bridle lame, but could have been on the way to it because of the way it sort of bent and didn't think. So it'd bend and hide behind the bridle and go behind the vertical because it thought, oh, you know, I'll just bend, but there was no desire or effort into what it was doing. So you're going well with the backup and the walking using direct rein. Okay, so with the backup, what happened is, firstly, Andrea's horse would put its head down and bend down, and it would get very heavy in the shoulders, and its shoulders would get very heavy. So basically what I to sort of help her with that, because the horse would sort of hide and just go down and down and bend in and roll in and then keep its shoulders heavy, I sort of said, well, we don't want to allow it to back up like that. We have to get it to back up a little bit better. So what we did is when the horse went to go down, I just said, pick your hands up, and just the horse would go lean, and then it'd lean into the reins and go, oh, I'm leaning into pressure, I can't go down. And then we just drew the reins up like that, and it'd just pick up, and then we just loosen up again. And then when we'd pick up the reins to back up and the horse went down, we just put the hands up and the horse would lean, and then it'd just come back off the reins and go, okay, I can't just duck my head down. So then when we backed up, we'd draw, and when the horse got good at just like loosening off the reins and coming up off the reins a little bit, we'd take the reins up in the back up, and as we'd take the reins up, the horse would loosen and come back and lift its shoulders back up and just come back off, back with its shoulders and lift up with its shoulders. So when it started to back, it'd pick its shoulders up and come back. But also, we didn't punish the horse as in make it frightened to the bit when it leant. We just said, if you keep leaning, we're just going to draw, and that's a bit of a spring down there. So it felt like it was springing onto the reins and saying, oh, okay. Right, I'm not going to push down there. That's not the way down. I'm not going to... So we're encouraging her not to hold the horse's head up, but we're just encouraging her not to spring down into there like that, because if it did, well, it would spring back a bit there. So, and that really helped the horse, because it really picked up and started to pick up and back up like a nice horse. And I think, Bern, you had a horse a little bit like that. So, Bern, who had a question, you remember it, at how long your horse, we kind of did the same thing. It was a Palomino quarter horse too, a Palomino quarter horse that ducked away and hid from the reins a bit. So that was one way we helped the horse, to hide from the reins so much. So, however, at the trot, he's ducking behind the bridle. So, okay, so he's ducking behind the bridle at the trot. So, when you're riding him and you pick up a bit of weight of the reins, he's probably hiding before he does anything. And he might be dropping his head down, I guess that's what you mean. He's dropping his head down in there when he's trotting. So it's kind of a bad habit. Now, I'm just trying to think what I'd do for him without watching him. So something you can think of is maybe just trot him for a while and start to get him better at just little increment turns. So like I talked about just previously about turn centre, turn centre, turn centre. So maybe just get him good at sort of just trotting on a loose rein, taking a turn, trotting on a loose rein, trotting, taking a turn, trotting on a loose rein, taking a turn, till he's just doing nice little adjustments with the reins, and he's thinking about the left and the right rein, as in thinking about creating a new direction and loosening up, creating a new direction, loosening up, and he's more concerned about finding centre and just finding the direction, opposed to sort of, oh, here comes the bit. So maybe doing a lot of getting him really balanced in the turns and the straight lines, just little increment turns, that he's just floating along, and then maybe what you could do just to say, so just getting off the idea of just bending and hiding behind the reins, just do something different for a while. So don't take up two reins for a while till he's more balanced and comfortable. And then when you do take up two reins, possibly get him comfortable that you can just trot him down into a walk, and then from the walk you might just walk him and just gently slow him into a sort of slow walk, and then from a slow walk you can just get him to come and do a nice loose balanced back up, and then you can go off and trot off again and do your turns, and then when he's listening to you nicely, you just slow your seat into a walk without your reins, don't touch your reins. And then you might just get him into a grandpa walk, and then just start to back him out of the grandpa walk and do a nice back up. And then you might just trot him off again and, do that sort of stuff for a while, and just get him not thinking about hiding, just doing other stuff till a few rides down the track you might find that he's starting to get a bit more, oh, crikey, she's not just going to start to bend me back all the time, bend me back. And then what you might start to do, as you slow down through your trotting seat, and he's just going up and down. You might have saw it at that clinic. I'm not sure if you go up a step, down a step in your trotting seat. Okay, when he's doing stuff like that and he's doing his little increment turns and things like that, and you just give him a loose rein and trotting along. Because sometimes if he's just hiding from nothing, just squeeze him up a little bit. So say, for instance, if you just got a loose rein and just hiding him because he's trotting and he thinks that's what he's got to do, I just trot him out faster and just go up and up a step in my trot and get him to trot up, trot down, trot up, and don't worry about the reins, just don't worry about his head, just let him find his own balance. And then yeah, I see on that also question you've got at the halt he puts his head up, which is very, very common. Don't worry about it. Just go into the grandpa walk, pick up the reins, and when he halts, he's going to put his head up, but you're going to have the reins on him, and he's just going to loosen and come back up, and you've got to do that transition a lot of times. Okay? But yeah, back to that trotting is... just try that for a little while. Oh, sorry, I got lost there.